I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. Rupa Shenoy joins me. Hey, Rupa.
Hi, Marco.
I'm halfway through this incredible article, My Family Slave. It's the cover story in The Atlantic this month. I know you've read it. Have you read the whole thing?
I have.
It clearly foreshadows the tragic life of this woman, Lola. Who is she?
Lola means grandmother. She's from the Philippines, and she was brought by the author's family to this country.
And the family's also from the Philippines,
correct,
right?
Correct. Yeah. To be a servant, a live-in servant.
So Lola is dead. Alex Tisson, the reporter who wrote the story, is dead. But there's still something to talk about here, and that is the incredible reaction to this article. And it's just been shared everywhere on social media.
Yeah, it's clearly a flashpoint for Filipinos, Filipino Americans. The reaction has been very diverse. People love it, people hate it, and there are in-betweens. There's a Western perspective to it, there's a Filipino perspective to it, there's an American-Filipino perspective to it. So the reporter I spoke with kind of went through and cataloged all these responses just, you know, to document this moment of reaction to this very striking issue in the Filipino-American community and the Filipino community. Her name is Marnette Federis. She's a Filipino-American reporter in California.
All right, let's hear your conversation with her.
Would you mind breaking it down for us, the specific arguments for and against what people are saying?
The story came out, and it was very emotional. Everybody had all sorts of emotional responses to it. Initially, a lot of people, you know, kind of praised Tisson for his piece and called it beautiful writing. And then there was a backlash. People were like, no, this is not beautiful writing, or at least this is not a beautiful story. This is about abuse. This is about slavery, and we should all be angry about this. And then I think after that, at least from the Filipino community, was a feeling of defensiveness, sort of like, okay, yes, the anger is totally legitimate. However, we need to take a time out. There's a lot of other cultural forces or historical context that needs to be considered when it comes to reading this story. You know, everybody's angry. However, I think a lot in the Filipino community were thinking, they know Lola Eudocia's story is not the only one, that this is a pervasive problem. And so if you just look at it in the lens of anger, it doesn't actually solve the full problem. And so now I'm kind of seeing a lot more reflection, a lot more of how does this even happen? Why does this even happen? And sort of, okay, what's the next step? What can we do to learn from this?
Can you give us more context around the culture? People like Lola, the role that they've played in Filipino culture.
So I'm not a historian. What I know is sort of just from my own education and my own observation. But, you know, the Philippines is a country that has a really long history of colonialism, hundreds of years under the Spanish rule and then the United States. And so that kind of colonial history created a really powerful dynamic between groups of people, between the wealthy and the poor, between the powerful and the weak. There's very, very few powerful and very, very rich people at the top, and a lot of people at the very bottom who are in poverty. And, you know, sort of that history has created very distinct classes within the culture. And in the Philippines, it's actually very common for people to have domestic workers at their homes. You don't have to be super rich. This means nannies, housekeepers, you know, people who do your laundry. Even people in the working and middle class, they're able to have domestic workers. It's part of the landscape, and it's kind of part of the economy. And some people are in such poverty, and, you know, they don't have access to education. And so a lot of people are willing to take on that domestic work. And sometimes it's the only option, and it's a matter of survival. So when it's in that kind of situation, some of the employers feel like they're actually doing the domestic worker a favor, that paying their worker, you know, maybe a really small wage, or maybe paying them room and board is enough. And the domestic workers might feel, you know, there's a little bit of internalization about that. They might feel indebted to the employer because, you know, what's the other option? And that kind of power dynamic, it creates a situation that's really rife for abuse. So I think what people in the Filipino community want others to know is that there are all these other things at play when it comes to the story of Lola Eudocia. And beyond being angry and calling for imprisonment for the Tisson family, you have to ask yourself, how did this even come to be?
Yeah, and it really depends on point of view, right? Have you thought about that, how these lenses are coming into play? Like, there's one way that a family from the West would see this. Another way, as someone like Tisson would see it, as a person who grew up in the States. And he describes in the story kind of watching old movies and seeing the way African Americans were treated as slaves and slowly matching that up with the way he saw his Lola being treated. Have you thought about that aspect?
Americans are looking at this from the American lens. Filipinos are looking at this from the Filipino lens. And, you know, that's why there's kind of a certain tone of defensiveness. Tisson, you know, it's interesting because he was born in the Philippines and he saw this going on and he saw the dynamics there from the very beginning. And then he goes to the United States and, yeah, you're supposed to know about civil rights and, you know, he learned about the history of African-American slavery, and that's kind of where he starts to see, you know, Lola's situation for what it really was. But, and, you know, so his lens is Filipino-American lens, and that's a very different type of perspective as well. And the way that people are responding, it really does correspond with their perspectives and who they are.
Do you think a kid who grew up in the States has a right to judge a culture where they didn't grow up?
You know, no culture is perfect, right? And I've seen Filipino writers talk about this, or Filipino, you know, netizens who are saying, you know, it's okay for people to criticize certain aspects of society. What we do with that criticism is really important. You know, we need to talk about things that we see going on that doesn't feel right, you know? And a lot of people are open to criticisms, but I think it has to be more than just being angry at certain things or being, you know, kind of reactionary. There needs to be a lot of reflection there.
Thank you very much, Marnette. I really appreciate your time.
Sure, no problem.
Marnette Federicere speaking with the world's Rupa Shenoy about reaction to a pretty dramatic story in The Atlantic this month titled My Family Slave. It's a kind of story you'd hear in Rupa's podcast, Otherhood. You can subscribe to Otherhood on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.